QuantSpeak, expert insights from quants for quants.
Welcome to QuantSpeak, a new podcast from the CQF Institute at Fitch Learning.
Hi, I'm Dan Tudball, editor of Wilmot Magazine, and this is QuantSpeak. Changing circumstances are at the heart of what quants do. This is, after all, a profession that is entirely concerned with uncertainty. Sometimes, however, the pace of that change can appear extreme, the behaviour of the markets throughout 2020 being a great example. The increasingly challenging nature of tasks, like calibration of curves to their underliers, means that what a quant chooses to prioritise in their workflow becomes all the more important. Wasting time on highly technical tasks that don't deliver any great advantage for your trading desk is not optimal. Today's guest, Dr. Misha Fomitsky, is well placed to talk about navigating the testing waters of the last few years. His firm, Vola Dynamics, designs curves and volatility surfaces that form the fundamental building blocks of any derivatives trading desk's activity. Misha's expertise in derivatives trading, risk management, and volatility modeling is rooted in years leading some of the top trading teams on Wall Street. So dealing with change, even stepping into entirely new worlds, are quite his forte. Welcome, Misha.
Thank you so much.
You're doing a talk for the CQF Institute entitled The New World of Options Trading, Valuation, Risk, and Robust Workflows, which will be coming up soon. One of the things, obviously, Misha, is we seem to be going into a new world on a more regular basis than perhaps people might be used to. 1929 was a new world, 1987 was a new world, 1990 was a new world, 2008 was a new world, and here we are, 2020 was certainly a new world. That aspect of the changes that occur in the finance industry and the way in which we look at things is always very exciting. So I'm very much looking forward to the talk that you're going to be doing. But first off, before that, I am really interested, as I said in your introduction, that you come from a career which has spanned both working on the financial services side of the industry in trading and in quant roles. And then you've moved into running your own business, creating software for quants. Could you tell us a little bit about how it was that you got involved in quantitative finance in the first place? What was that initial spark that actually set you off on this journey?
All founders of Vola Dynamics started in physics. While you are a physicist, you kind of learn all the relevant math and also learn very practical way of figuring out the truth and how to get from the data to formulating a theory about how to describe this data to testing this theory. And a lot of areas in physics also involve quite a bit of coding, like numerical coding. So that's a very good training for quant finance. When I joined actual team, Klassen was my first boss. He hired me from school to Wachovia Securities, where we were building equity derivative quant infrastructure from scratch. We had to write everything from a vanilla pricer to volatility feeder, a risk system, and everything that's involved in between, all the exotic pricers, Monte Carlo engines, and PDE pricers. That was the beginning of my career. At that point, I got very much interested in the financial markets and in learning everything about trading. After 3 years in that role, I moved to JD Capital Management. I started as a junior trader there. That was a very interesting transition where I had to understand very different aspects of the business. I was able to see how people manage risk, how research alpha, how to interact with all non-quantitative aspects of the business involved. That was very helpful later on when we started Vola Dynamics, because seeing the business from different perspectives is extremely helpful. So I saw this early in the career. I saw this from the point of view of the sell side, like exotic modeling and trading, Then I saw this from the point of a portfolio manager at a hedge fund, what people do with volatility. And then after JD Capital, I worked with Tim Klassen again at Getco, that became KCG and now part of Virtu, to build a high-frequency options market-making business from scratch. In our team, we have like very unique mix of experiences with different aspects of derivative businesses. So we built from scratch high-frequency options trading. We built from scratch infrastructure for exotic business. And I was involved in infrastructure development and trading as a PM at a hedge fund. So when we built infrastructure for people who are going to be using all these tools that we built, we make sure that they are going to be useful for anybody who would be trading or modeling derivatives.
It's always useful to have a mix of disciplines when you have colleagues to work with, especially when you're building a business for the first time. But I'm fascinated to find out, with you coming from a physics background, what was your initial reaction when you saw the Black-Scholes model? How did you feel about implied volatility?
Sure, everybody knows that Black-Scholes equation is just a diffusion equation. At the university, I was doing like plasma physics and I was modeling laser interaction with plasmas. So when I joined the bank quant team, all the tools were pretty much the same. It was still C++, it was still partial differential equations, well, maybe different boundary conditions, but there were a lot of similarities.
This is around what period?
I came to New York in 2004. Definitely later on, I realized that how much I do not know. Early in my career, I started learning anything about finance that I could. I read every book, anything from the fundamentals of finance to economics to definitely various aspects of quantitative modeling. And anybody who starts in their career, I definitely would encourage them to learn as much as possible about the things that are around the area that you're immediately working with.
2004 was a very interesting time to come into the financial markets because we were coming off of the impact of the dot-com bubble, but we were not yet into the subprime crisis and things were really ramping up very fast, especially with correlation type models and the underpinnings of what would be the subprime crisis. But at that point in time, when you came into the markets, things were very, very exciting and very, very positive. Do you have any reflections on that before going into any lessons that you learned from that previous new world that we came into after the 2008 subprime crisis?
From today's perspective, that was a unique period that in recent history that interest rates were not zero. I remember when around the time I joined, we were joking that interest rates were flat around 5%, and we were just asking ourselves questions that we need to make sure that the models will work when the interest rates are not 5% or have any term structure. Early on, I had a lot of things to learn, and it was mostly like via the interaction with the trading desk that you kind of understand what is and is not important in the quantitative aspects of trading.
Yes. Calibration becomes the watchword, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. The models that you can find in the textbooks, they're simply kind of building blocks of everything that you're going to build on top. But the hard problems are really extracting information from the market and understanding the underlying assumptions that you're making. To give you an example, yes, everybody can understand like local volatility model, and if you're diligent enough, you can implement calibration of, say, implied volatility surface and calibration of local volatility models. But understanding when it is applicable and when it's not, and understanding your model risk, that was kind of important in the exotic business. Like, for example, we would kind of go through the process of calibrating various stochastic volatility models under different assumptions, and quantifying the amount of like model risk that you are going to assume while pricing a particular exotic derivative, for example.
Going back to that previous question that I was talking about, what was your initial reaction to the way that implied volatility was thrown into that diffusion equation?
At some point in your financial career, you realize that the implied volatility is the wrong number to plug into the wrong formula to get the right price. Or in other words, you can think about the implied volatility as the change of variables. You go from highly nonlinear prices to much slower varying volatility parameter, which is equivalent to the price, but behaves just better, is more stable representation of a price, easier to work with. And then you have enormous amount of research about these implied volatilities, how they, like kind of what kind of shapes they can and cannot be, what kind of arbitrage relationships can be expressed in terms of volatilities, what kind of intuition you can gain from the shape of volatility curve, and what kind of dynamic behavior of this volatility surface you can expect. That's where quants and traders spend considerable amount of time really thinking about this. So in a sense, this is kind of a convenient change of variable that makes everything you do like easier in these variables.
Yes, it's always struck me as a great irony that here we see two wrongs making a right. And essentially that equation created the entire world in which quants have operated over the last 40 plus years.
Definitely, like we've been working with implied volatilities for almost half a century. But although there is a consensus about implied volatilities for European options, when it comes to American options with cash dividends, there is no consensus yet about how to think about implied volatilities. And this is one problem that we are trying to address to bring some consistency and standardize the way how people think about modeling volatility for the case of cash dividends. You can definitely make different assumptions, and they're going to lead to slightly different math and slightly different properties of that, of what you call implied volatility. But there is actually some relationship between all of them. And in our infrastructure, we make this as seamless as possible for people to agree on what the volatility in that for American options with cash dividends is.
That challenge has become even more focused over the last few years. Would you agree?
Absolutely. The transformation of the market over, especially like over the last decade, has been enormous. The major transformations were tightening of the spreads, which started like with penny pilot program, and the proliferation of listed strikes and expirations. Right now, we have something of the order of like 1.5 million listed options in the US only, and SPX only has of the order of like 18,000 listed options and close to 40 expirations. This became very difficult doing like pricing and calibration with such enormous amount of input data and such a high granularity of how you can parameterize the probability distribution embedded in the prices of the options became like a major engineering problem. And that's one of the main hard problems that we solve for our clients.
I'd like to talk about your transition from working on the sell side through to that initial impetus to actually set up Vola Dynamics. What was it that got you excited about going it alone? Because this is a kind of a scary thing for a lot of people to step away and become the master of your own destiny, if you will. And for quants as well, I mean, specifically the idea that you're going to be able to take these skills that you've built up over the years through your academic experience and through your professional experience and then put that to use in a very different context.
Yeah, starting your own business is definitely a super exciting and super challenging experience. I did this several times in my life before, not quite successful, but this was still kind of valuable learning experience. But what kind of triggered the idea that we can do this was the following. So when we were at Getco, Gettko was like had a very good reputation of being a pioneering high frequency firm. And at some point, everybody wanted to work there. So we interviewed quants and traders from pretty much every street. And we asked them questions how they solve standard problems about valuation and risk. And one thing that we realized was that in the fast changing market environment, everybody's having problems with this. Many firms invested many decades into building the infrastructure, and they would still be keep investing in developing this infrastructure and still face the same problems over and over. We happened to build option valuation infrastructure from scratch several times in a row. Like Tim started at Goldman, where he was working on building local volatility model there. And in order to do this, of course, you need to first come up with sensible implied volatility surfaces. Then we built all the quant infrastructure from scratch at Wachovia. Then I had to implement some valuation framework at the hedge fund. And then we did this at Gettko, built absolutely from scratch, everything from valuation to risk management. In the case of high frequency business, high frequency options market making, it had to be super fast and super robust. This is kind of a very different requirement than many banks, for example, have, because trading is fully automated and you need to be able to solve the problem without no glitches at like on any market tick. And you need to know at any point whether your answers are can be relied on or not for placing orders in the market. So this was kind of a very high bar, a very interesting challenge. And we knew that very few people have good solutions for this. When we were thinking after there were some like acquisitions happening at Gettko, and I did my own thing for some time. And then in discussion with Tim, what we can do after that, it became obvious that this is a market opportunity. We do not really need every firm on the street to build a very good option price with cash dividends. We do not need every shop to build and maintain a volatility feeder. These are all very hard problems that require very unique expertise to solve them well. They're kind of required to run the business well, but they are not something that firms really differentiate themselves against. One question that commonly arises is if our client should build it internally, or buy this from us. And the common argument that we make is that when you're solving this problem with an investment of a few man years, you can get a working solution. But that working solution is going to cover only a certain fraction of practical use cases. Basically, it's going to work, I don't know, 90% of the time or 95% of the time. And then there are a lot of special situations, special cases, different environments, either super liquid or super liquid names, or particular market environments that needs to be handled differently. You have to deal with cash dividends, events, and so on and so forth. And this problem pretty much never ends. So you will have to spend between 3 and 30 man years to build the infrastructure. And in addition to this, you will have from 1 to 3 people maintaining this infrastructure. But if you can acquire the same capability from the people who did it many times and do this at a very high level and can maintain it and make sure that it always works in every market environment and it's going to work for all asset classes, for all underliers and all market conditions, then you can deploy your quant resources towards building the tools that are specific to your business, specific to how you research alpha, manage risk, and in which you differentiate your business.
Absolutely. It's a compelling argument. Whatever it is, if you've got a racing car, they're all going to need wheels. Ultimately, it's going to be the engine and the driver that makes the differentiation between who crosses the finishing line first. You're essentially saying that the provision of those wheels can be a very arduous and time-consuming task. And if you're going to keep on reinventing the wheel, what's the point? You're going to lose so much time that you could have been concentrating on that engine.
That's right.
Once you departed into Vola And we've seen a very interesting period of time over the last 5 or 6 years, particularly in terms of quant's relationships to volatility. And we're starting to see definitely two definable camps between those who are beginning to subscribe to the rough volatility point of view and those who are still sitting on the fence to a certain extent. How do you feel about this discussion which is going around volatility within the market context? And I know that you guys work very closely with Jim Gatherill as well, so I'm very interested to see what your views are on this.
Rough volatility is definitely a super interesting concept that Jim and other people developed over the last decade or so. And it does seem to describe well every fact we know about the dynamic structure of volatility. And that's very fascinating. In one way, it's very simple. And in another sense, it's not very simple. We're still in the process of discovering how it can and should be used in practice. Specifically to the products that we have on offer, we do not explicitly use anything that comes out of the rough volatility model. And the main reason for this is that everything that we do is very performance sensitive. We have a number of clients who are high frequency market makers, and we need to perform the entire calculation, pricing, and risk like in real time. This is at least like one set of problems that we want to solve. Also, the rough volatility describes the behavior of the market with broad strokes. It has relatively few parameters, whereas the modern liquid markets have a lot of structure. The market has a lot of opinions about the specific structure of the probability distribution of the asset returns. For example, to describe one expiration of SPX, you need something like 14 to 16 parameters to have a bias-free fit. And when you have of the order of 40 expiries, that's definitely an enormous calibration challenge. It's slightly different level of the description than what is required for a very specific part of the problem of describing volatility. But we are definitely looking at this and we are thinking about this. It's definitely has a lot of potential to be useful.
You mentioned increased parameterization in the equity markets, but certainly this is something that's also started to be witnessed in FX and fixed income. You will be touching on that in your talk, as well as I understand it, in the context of W-shaped vol curves, for example. What can you tell us about that?
So we started seeing W-shapes probably as early as 2005 in tech names. So what happens is around earnings, you can have a situation when the market is expecting on the earnings announcement for the stock to jump either up or down a lot. And this leads to so-called bimodal distribution of the returns, where you have two humps in the probability density. And if you look at such distribution and volatility space, it's going to manifest itself as a W-shaped volatility curve, or some people call it sombrero volatility curve. So you're going to have negative curvature around the money and still fat tails. The interesting thing is that most of the common tools that have been used throughout the years, such as Jim Gatherill's SVI, Volsurf's SSVI, or Sabre, they do not allow this in principle. So in order to describe such a market, if you're using vol curve framework for evaluation, then you need more flexible volatility surfaces that allow such shapes. However, in addition to that problem, for very liquid products, you also have non-trivial shape. The markets in the tails are super tight and still have structure. So in order to be able to match that market. For example, if you're a market maker and you want to quote without a bias, you want to quote around a valuation that comes from a vol curve, you need a curve that's described by a large number of parameters. There was a debate whether one should use vol curves at all in such situations, or whether you should go for some non-parametric framework, such as kernel smoothing of splines. However, there are considerable advantages of using vol curves, because if you can come up with parameters that are meaningful and parameters that can be common across different curves, for example, in our framework, the first three parameters have the same meaning, at the money forward volatility, normalized Q, and normalized curvature, then it's very useful in a number of ways. First of all, traders can develop some intuition about these parameters. It can tell you something. Quant traders can use forecasting algorithms or some other algorithms that operate in this parameter space independently of what curve you use. It can be a fairly illiquid name which can be fit with three parameter curve. If anywhere in your valuation or risk framework, you can use these parameters, then you can use it for a three parameter curve or 16 parameter curve. Also, once you have a parameter curve, it's much easier to implement dynamics, because you can make certain assumptions about how these parameters move when the underlier moves or when the time moves. And this is super useful in a number of applications. So for example, these dynamic properties of volatility surfaces are essential when you are trying to calculate adjusted Greeks or smart Greeks or skew Greeks. People call them different ways, but this basically, for example, calculate delta, and you want to, by looking at the data, you can notice that implied volatilities by strike systematically move when the underlier moves. This can be parameterized, and it's much easier to parameterize it when you have a parametric vol surface. Then your dynamics becomes very simple and intuitive. Parametric vol surfaces are useful when you calculate like big scenarios. Like suppose you want to figure out how a vol surface is going to look when the market is down 20% or up 5%. With parametric vol surfaces, you can actually come up with fairly accurate estimates of what is happening, like much more realistic estimates of how this is happening. And with the correct parameterization of the vol dynamics, you can get it accurate for fairly large moves. In many kind of practical trading applications, the spot vol dynamics is also very useful. I'll give you a couple of examples. When you have the vol surface from the previous day and you need to trade the open before you have the quotes to fit the market, then using spot vol dynamics, you can adjust your vol surface to the pre-open level of the underlier. Or if you trade cross markets, like for example, you trade Japan versus US, you can take the market from the close in Asia, adjust your vol surface to the futures level that correspond to US or European market, and you can price products or spreads that correspond to that across underliers that do not trade in the same hours. That's definitely like very, very valuable.
What do you think are going to be the major challenges for quants over the next 5 years? Given that we've had this shift last year, particularly, what do you foresee as being the major areas that quants really ought to be focusing on?
The fundamental shift in the tool set available since I've been in the business, it's machine learning. This is a fascinating area with a lot of potential, a lot of capabilities, and a lot of ways to misuse it. It often has bad reputation, and often for a good reason, but also other people underestimate its potential as well. When we started in the business, it was kind of pencil and paper, differential equations, and solutions of stochastic calculus. These were the tools that we spend almost all our time. Now we have enormous amount of data and very clever tools to deal with the data. But one cannot just view it as a black box that some mysterious algorithm, you just throw data at it and it's just going to give you the answer. So I think the correct way to do this is the combination of the two approaches and the layering of these approaches. In some sense, you want to kind of separate different layers of your workflow into sub-problems, and at each level, you either solve it with the traditional mathematical tools or with the machine learning tools, and then you go to another step that may use a different approach. For a number of quants, this is going to be a learning process of how to use machine learning tools and how not to use them. The challenge is that you need to understand the domain that you are modeling, and you need to know the good command in math to be able to solve things analytically when you can. And also you need to know machine learning algorithms and how to use them when that approach is applicable as well. And that's a lot of area to cover.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's very interesting that you raise the point of understanding the domain that you're dealing with. Do you feel that a lot of practitioners perhaps forego that to a certain extent in terms of kinds of assets that they're really dealing with, and it just becomes a set of numbers only?
This is the problem, definitely in quant finance and trading, but this is in any kind of human activity. Big blunders happen when people do not understand the details of the domain with which they deal.
Was there anything else that you wanted to cover with respect to your talk?
Well, there's one thing that I'm going to go over in my talk is typical workflows, how you go from raw market data to being able to value and risk manage everything that you need to. I like many steps in this process and what kind of problems people usually face and how to usually identify them and address them. And also kind of what tool sets are useful and available that make people's life much easier. So when you have a parametric vol surface with volatility dynamics functionality built in, you can fairly easily build useful tools for comparing risks of different instruments. You can value vol derivatives and like VIX products relative to SPX. And with the dynamic assumptions, you can calculate kind of all the cross risks. Like in principle, if you just look at in price space or vol by strike space, it's a super hard problem. But with the parametric vol surfaces, you can analytically calculate if you know how SPX vol surface moves when the underlier moves. You can calculate, for example, how much of VIX future is going to move when the SPX moves, pretty much analytically. And you can calculate what's going to happen to VIX futures when SPX volatility, for example, moves by vol point. These calculations become like fairly simple. Then a different kind of set of tools that's super helpful in trading infrastructure and trading operation is kind of P&L attribution tool. That's a new thing that we're going to release. And there are various ways to think about P&L attribution. Like you can think of this in terms of either sensitivities or in terms of scenarios. And if you have a very nice set of scenario languages on a volatility surface, you can do like fairly neat things in this problem that might be like very valuable to trading. So it's like in general, kind of understanding your P&L, I think is super important. I found like very valuable when I was in a trader seat. It serves several useful purposes. It's a good check that everything you do makes sense. If you have anything inconsistent in your calculation, your assumptions about your risks, market data, contract definitions, anything, you will have huge unexplained P&L right away. So this is kind of a very good diagnostic tool that all your ducks are in a row. Even if you change your model assumptions from one day to another, you will notice this. If you can decompose your P&L into factors, then you get much more clarity about your alpha and your risk management. You know which factors you forecast, you know which factors you do not forecast. And if you can attribute your P&L to those factors, then you get a much better feedback loop about what you should be doing more, what you should be doing less. That can be a huge topic of its own, but I think it's kind of a general rule that it's much easier to improve what you can measure.
Thank you very much for your time, Misha. We're definitely going to be tuning in for your talk, and I wish you all the best with your future endeavors at Vola.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to QuantSpeak. Don't forget to subscribe and do sign up to the CQF Institute for more insights into quant finance.